Welcome to an episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge and experience and wisdom from hundreds of successful people around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted to have a conversation with Gerald Babel-Sutter. Gerald, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me, Fritz. Pleasure to be here.
No, welcome to have you here. Let me introduce you to the audience. You are the co-founder and CEO of Urban Future. Now you have a conference and marketing background. You're educated in the US, specifically Harvard and NYU. You call yourself a change maker and you live in Austria. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would about do it.
Great. Now, we're going to jump in the deep end. What is Urban Future all about?
Urban Future is about people who drive change and who drive change in cities to make cities better or more sustainable in particular. And we just happened to stumble into this by chance, to be honest. And it developed from a workshop idea into Europe's biggest event and gathering for this kind of crowd. And it is really a very, very unique urban event, simply because it's not for one particular group of people. So it's not for the planners or the mobility people or the politicians. It's really for everyone who wants to make change happen. And, you know, this could be anywhere. Yeah.
So for those people not familiar with Urban Future is an annual conference?
Yes, that's part of it. Urban Future is a European event at this point, even though we're now branching into Asia Pacific and into Latin America also. But it has been for the past years been a European event. And during COVID, where there were no events around, we also learned a lot about ourselves because we found out that it is not just an event where people get together, but it's actually a really global community of urban shapers. And at this point, this community is about 50,000 people who are connected to us, who interact with us, who help us share this change-making ideas around the world.
Now, as I mentioned, your background is conference and marketing, and you're educated at the Harvard Law School. So how does somebody with a marketing background, law school, end up trying to build future cities?
Well, it was not Harvard Law School, luckily. I wouldn't be here if it was law school. And I was not even trained in events. I was trained as a financial, I studied international financial engineering to be exact, because in the 90s, I wanted to become a stockbroker. I went to New York, that was the time of Wall Street movies. And I said, yeah, I'm gonna, become a millionaire in 2 years. And I studied the right study for that. I did my first internship, my first semester break. And I hated it so much that I said, okay, I'm going to do any job but investment banking. And that was the start of my career.
So, but then again, okay, so you found out this is not my future. I'm going to do something completely else. But then still again, question, how did you end up looking at the future of cities?
Well, as I already mentioned before, so this was really a total coincidence. Because I had no formal education whatsoever in the field of urbanism, architecture, urban planning, governance, or something like that. I did work as a consultant that gave me a very broad set of skills that I always say this is the best paid school in the world. Really very helpful to build the skills that I can use now. And it was exactly those skills that helped me help a friend who asked me when I was between jobs. She said, well, can you help me with a project? I acquired a project, a consulting project, and I don't really know how to do it. Can you help me manage it? And that's what I did. I said, okay, I can, pretend basically and make sure that the project runs smoothly and things are done. And it was in one of those days with the project team of the client that we had a really interesting conversation on cities. And it was their project manager who said, Gerald, you know what? I cannot hear the word smart cities anymore. So that sparked a really interesting discussion on, you know, what cities need and what are the challenges for cities. And yeah, the bottom line of that was that he said, everything you can read and all the events are about what cities should be doing. Mm-hmm. So do this, do that. But he said, that's not the issue. The issue to them is how to do it. I mean, everybody knows, okay, we need to reduce CO2 emission. We need to, you know, reduce car use in city centers. We need to transform things. But how do we actually do it?
Okay. So, Gerald, just a question. You just mentioned smart cities. We're talking about smart cities at the end of the day. Could you give a definition of what a smart city is? What are we talking about?
Well, you can probably have a million of different smart city definitions. But when you ask me personally, my definition is free as Forrest Gump, where they say stupid is who stupid does. And I would say smart is who does smart. It has been hijacked by the technology industry, I think, initially. If you got stupid people with smart technology, it doesn't help you anything. So to me, a smart city is a city that has a strong leadership, that has a very good social fabric, and is able, in particular, able to solve challenges along the way quickly and efficiently. That's smart to me, because the finest technology or tech hub or whatever sensors help you nothing if a challenge comes up and you have no idea how to solve it.
Okay, so because in a lot of cases, smart cities is indeed associated in a lot of definitions about implementing technology. And your point is, it's not about the technology. Because I saw quite a few, the key problem with cities is cities are not built for people, but to move people in cars. Could you expand on that quote?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that quote, you have to look at that in a differentiated way, because it's not entirely true. Because if you look, for example, at old European cities in Italy, Spain, Austria, Germany, if you look at the city centers, they were not built for the car. They were not built for moving people around. That was for hosting people and to have a social fabric. There were squares, there were marketplaces, etc. And it was only relatively recently in human history that we started to build cities for cars. So if you look at North American cities, for example, if you leave the East Coast, there you can see it very well. You know, it was the grid system and everything is about efficiency, about the car. And most European cities now also, to be honest, that was the past, 70, 80 years, when cities were built for cars or to move people around. Yeah, it is. And so, we have a lot of car thinking in the cities and in the people. It's not only, you know, the cities as planners or politicians, it's also the people themselves. I mean, look at every pedestrianization project that's out there. You always have an outcry, oh, we can't drive there.
Okay. Sure. By the way, what is a pedestrianization project? What does that mean?
When you close a street for cars.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay. My initial assessment is based on what our discussion right now is basically, this is about reducing the amount of cars in the city. Is it that simple or is it more than that?
To do what? What, you know?
Well, you talk about developing a city. Cities, are, if I understand, poorly designed when they are around cars, and those are not sustainable cities. So is this not a matter of reducing cars in a city, or is it much more complex question to solve? to create livable, sustainable cities?
That's the point. To do what? And so if the goal is to have livable and livable cities, I think you need to start with the target. What is your goal? And if the goal is to have a livable city that's also sustainable, you will need to address the factor of CO2 emissions. And unfortunately, it's fact that the individual mobility is one of the key drivers of CO2 emissions. So if you want to reduce CO2 emissions, you will have to look at that. There are wonderful places in the world where you have cities or villages where, extreme good and very well livable, but everybody drives and everybody's happy. So you need to start with what you're aiming at. I think when it's about CO2 emissions and making the city livable on one end and sustainable or more sustainable on the other hand, yes, you will need to address mobility. It's a key job in the city to have people move around. And yes, there must be a solution to CO2 emissions in individual mobility. But that's just one part, one big part of it. Because you have, when you talk about individual mobility in cars, for example, and you particularly asked about cars, you have the situation of emissions and and you have the situation with space. So if you, for example, take now all the combustion engine driven cars and substitute them by electric vehicle, yes, you might reduce in the way the emissions in that particular city. But you're not solving the space issue, because then you have e-cars in traffic jams. So you will have to look at how should and can people move around in cities efficiently without producing CO2 emissions. And that's a very challenging task. And a lot of cities are tackling it, and a lot of cities are not tackling it at all.
Okay. Now, you more or less described, say, the objective, what you want to reach with Urban Future. You briefly mentioned that you bring various people together. Could you tell us a little bit more, how does that look like? So what do you actually do, and what kind of results are you hoping for?
Well, we learned the hard way when we started Urban Future. We were shooting for a workshop for 20 people that grew to a little event for 150 people. And when the first thing actually happened, it was 1,000 people from 30 countries. And we had no clue why so many people showed up. So we looked very closely at who showed up. And we saw people would come from any discipline, people would come from any kind of organization, and they would come from any hierarchy level. So we had no clue why this extremely diverse group would come to Urban Future. And bless you. And it was only through some in-depth interviews that we found out what really linked this group together. And that is that every single one of them, whether it was a politician, a mayor, a business person, a student, an NGO representative, or whoever attended, they had a very, very strong personal drive and passion to make change happen. And that is the core of the people who we bring together. So, and we then learned, okay, so these people share a mindset and they share a passion and they somehow have the same goal, even though they have very different means and possibilities to do so. So we thought, what if we get them together and let them just see that there are many of them? Because many of these change makers, they are anxious, they want to do things, and things are moving too slow for them. And they have often the perception that they're the only ones who care. And then suddenly they come into a place where they got 3,000 people and they're all like them. And suddenly they see, oh, there's so many. And they can learn from each other. And that's the idea, is to connect these people who do things, let them share very openly how they do it, and importantly, how not to do it. So it's a very open mistake culture People share, politicians share fuck ups that they had in their careers for others to learn out of it. And we basically just provide the platform for them to get together and do their magic. That's it.
Okay. Well, it sounds easy the way you describe it, but I guess it's hard work to get everybody together. Now, I understand you move from city to city around Europe. Does this mean you're trying to resolve one city at a time, or how can other cities involve? How does that work?
Urban Future happens once a year, and every time it's in a different city. And the stage of the event is just the backdrop for it to happen in a city. It's not to solve a particular city, because people come from hundreds of cities from all around Europe and beyond to come together in a place. But obviously, the story of that particular city always plays a role because you are in that environment. So when we had been in Oslo, for example, in the city center, it was at that time the biggest car-free city center in the world. And people experienced it for the first time to be in the city center. You could walk for 10 minutes and you don't see a car. And a lot of people were totally surprised. You know, they said something's different here, but they couldn't really pinpoint it. And it took a day until they realized it. So we use these cities as a stage, basically, and bring in their story and their learning also. But it's not only about those cities. It's predominantly about the people that are getting together and the learnings that they had in driving change. And it is quite interesting, because if you are a leader, or if you're somebody who drives change wherever you are, the challenges are pretty similar. And that's why a mayor can relate to a project manager from a sustainability project, for example, very easily, because they have similar challenges. They need to get people on board, they need to convince people, they need to get the right people, et cetera. So, and that's what they're talking about.
Okay, you just mentioned the change. And as a change maker, what would your advice be? What's your, is there a default approach to successfully change something?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Best practice?
I think what is important for anybody who wants to make change happen is get started now. Yeah. Make your first step. The first step is always the toughest. Make a step, do something, and if you have results, learn from it, improve, and make your next step. And if you keep doing that constantly, and you're not taking things for granted, and you constantly question yourself how you could improve things, and how other people can join in your cause, then you're on the right track.
Okay.
And it's totally okay to fail. I think everybody comes to the situation where it's okay, it didn't work. That's okay, because whenever you innovate and try new things, it's, you know, things sometimes don't work out, and that's okay.
And but that's something you have to accept. That's part of the change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's why so many politicians fear it, because at least in Europe, in Central Europe and Southern Europe, it's very difficult to get out there and say, yeah, well, sorry, that project was a total failure. We thought it was good, but, you know, it just turned out to be a total failure, because then you have a lot of people who always say, yeah, well, I could have told you so before. And then there is this huge political dispute. But, you know, in some other regions of the world, it is not that way.
Okay. So, now, how do you then inspire people? First of all, the people who visit your big conference to contribute, share their fuck-ups. And how do you motivate your own staff to get in that same mindset?
Well, when I talk about my stuff, that's the easy one. We kind of tend to pull in like-minded people. You know, they're all extremely passionate about the topics. And that's pretty much how we also find our speakers and cases. We get recommended, we ask around in our networks, and we say, okay, this is our topic. Can you recommend somebody? And, you know, when you have 50,000 people that you could reach out to, and you're asking for inspiring people in the topic XYZ, you get some ideas and then you find your way. But I think what's more interesting is the first part of the question. How do you get people to share such fuck ups?
Yeah.
In particular, in, let's say, difficult environments like Austria, where politicians never make mistakes publicly. This depends on the scene that you're setting and the environment that you're providing, because all the people that are coming together are like the same kind of people. It gives people on stage the confidence and also the reassurance that it is okay to talk about mistakes. Also, nobody would come, you know, film it and then post it on YouTube and start laughing at you because you made a mistake, because everybody knows this is totally okay and part of a journey to make mistakes. And it's important actually to make mistakes. And in particular, the politicians that are getting on stage, they not only feel that this is the right environment to talk about it, but they are predominantly leaders who have understood how important making mistakes and learning out of mistakes is to advance.
I got that. Now, you just mentioned that you have a community of over 50,000 people to ask who are inspiring people. Where do you draw your inspiration from?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just can't stop it. It just comes at me under the shower, in the swimming pool, when I'm playing with my kids, when I'm walking through the city, when I'm cycling, that comes a lot from there. A lot of inspiration actually comes from my wife. I'm very happily married, and she is a very particular person when it comes to other people. And she always brings the best out of people. So she is a big inspiration to me, how to become a better person, if you want to call it that way.
If you have a spouse who actually allows you to do that, I mean, that's very great to have. Now, funny enough, you just mentioned, this is about sharing mistakes. And it's one of the questions we ask the people we interview for the Brand Called You as well. What are the biggest learnings and the biggest mistakes in your own life so far?
Let's start with the fuck ups, because there are plenty.
Yeah.
I think one thing that really stuck to me is be true to yourself. I think this is something that I haven't been in my life all the time. And if you're not true to yourself, in particular, when it comes to personal relationships, it is a big source of trouble, of emotional turmoil, etc. So if you're taking personal decisions, in my case, to marry a person, you should be damn sure that you're doing that decision for the right reason, and not because, I don't know, you're lonely, or because you got nothing better to do, or because your life plan says I need to be married before I'm 30, or whatever. Be sure that it's the right reason. And if it's not the right reason, don't do it. And this is probably something that you can use in many different settings. You can use it in your private life, certainly in business life. When you're changing jobs, make sure that you're making that change because of the right reason, and not because, I don't know, some cliche or big paycheck, or at least be true to it and say, okay, I want to just double my pay, and that's the number one reason. Fine. So that's something that I learned the very hard way. So, yeah. But I think when it comes to other learnings, maybe, let me think.
Well, we can revisit the question because there was one other thing I've found out about you. Your credo is just do it. Why? What does that mean?
Well, I worked as a consultant several years, and as a consultant, you have the very privileged situation that you come into an organization or into a team, you work with them on changing something or fixing something, and then you leave. And very often, the actual plan is important for people to understand certain issues. But by far the more important thing is to then act on the plan. And the best plan doesn't help you anything if you're not get going. So if you want to change things, if you want to transform something, or if you want to have an impact, if you have a dream that you want to follow, hey, just, you know, take the first step and do it. You're the only barrier from succeeding. So get going.
Makes sense. Can we revisit the question you've been thinking about, or should we move on?
Actually, I have a second credo. That's also something that is probably one of the learnings from my career.
Okay.
Is there are no problems, just challenging situations. Yeah. So that sounds like a poster that you put up somewhere in your office, really annoying. But I heard that when I was 21, I heard that at university, it was my accounting professor actually who told me so. And funny enough, it just keeps coming at me. You know, when you have problems in your life, I don't know, your girlfriend is leaving you, or you're losing your job. You say, okay, I got a problem. Damn, I'm fucked. And when you start putting your energy in how poor you are and how bad the situation is, it is. Then you're in a bad situation. If you say, okay, so that's a challenge now, I need to get a new job, it's a very different perspective on looking at the situation. And, you know, we have been running events for thousands of people, and then came COVID, and we were to zero within 2 weeks. That is a challenging situation if you have a staff of 10 and a big payroll to pay every month. But as I said, a challenge is always also leaves room for a positive thing. And whatever happens, it always has a positive aspect to it. In our particular case, we learned a lot about ourselves. We ventured into different things. We started to much closer collaborate with our network. We launched an online platform for change-making know-how and so on. So many different things that you can be doing. And, you know, as bad as the situation might be in that moment, there's always a positive side to it. Sometimes it might take quite some time to figure it out, but
that's actually when the creativity starts, I guess.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, one final question before we go, Gerald, because it was a pleasure talking to you. When are you going to be finished with Urban Future? Will you be finished? And how do you tie down to that? How do you want the world to remember you?
Okay, that's a lot of question in one sentence. So I don't know when and if Urban Future is going to be finished. I tend not to make long-term plans because you never know what's coming and what's happening. Maybe we come up with a much better plan and do something else. Maybe this thing just works well as it is and we just keep doing it. Or I do something completely different. I don't know. How I want the world to remember me? I don't care how the world remembers me. I think what I do care is how the people I love remember me. And if they think of me, like when I'm gone and they think of me and they smile, perfect. I think then I did a good job.
Now, I understand that, seriously, I understand that family at the end of the day is one of the most important things in life. But isn't there just a little bit inside of you said, hey, if I want to go down as Mr. Urban Future, who helped create a better cities around the world, you'd be happy with that?
I would, but it's not, you know, I'm not the big Sampano here. I'm just, you know, I'm helping people who actually do the work. So I'm not the important one. You know, we had an idea. We provide these people with a platform. So if I can say at the end of my life, I said, hey, I helped thousands of people to become more effective, I would be happy. But, you know, my goal is not that thousands of people say, oh, thank God Gerald had been around to help us be better shapers.
Gerald, I very much appreciate and like your mindset. I just wanted to challenge you on that. So you've given us some great insights in what you're doing with Urban Future. So where's it going to be next year?
Next year, we're going to be in Stuttgart, Germany. Another challenge because we're talking about sustainable cities in the car metropolis of Germany. So that's going to be fun. Very much looking forward to it. And we're expecting anywhere around 3,000 people from all across Europe and beyond to come together and challenge each other. Yeah.
So who knows, maybe some people listening to this podcast will be inspired, will want to come to Stuttgart next year. And we'll make sure that those details will be shared with the audience. Gerald, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Fritz, thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.